Chapter 14.
Drusel's voice carried over the intercom, interrupting a kiss that was more than a peck on the cheek.
Quick thinking, Luke Skywalker, and admirable piloting. But be advised, it is now probable the Empire will know where we are.
We broke apart, and Nagari chucked me once on the shoulder and whispered, "To be continued." She returned to her seat and buckled in while I responded to Drusel. "Why is that?"
"That small fleet was patrolling the sector of space that would come from Exidine."
"So, that's what pirates do."
"Do they normally waste fuel by having their escorts launched and spread out for fast attack, when they could simply have scrambled to catch an unsuspecting and slow-moving cargo ship? Most of their normal targets would not suspect anything of that cruiser until it launched fighters at them, and by then it would be too late. Catching a fast ship, piloted by a crew anxious to avoid capture, however, requires different tactics. Am I correct? Hence the fighters already in position. Few fleets would be so wasteful of their resources otherwise."
"You mean they'd already heard about the bounty on us, and were patrolling in case we showed up?"
"Yes. And now they can profit merely by reporting that they have seen us, and telling the Empire which direction we fled."
"They had plenty of time to scan us, Luke," Nakari said. "They would know we have three lifeforms aboard. If the pirates get a message to them quickly enough, we could be running into Imperials sooner rather than later."
Drusel chimed in.
"A message from the pirates isn't necessary to make an Imperial encounter likely. We're near a frequently patrolled area of the galaxy. I happen to know the Empire has been inspecting, and thereby harassing, all traffic going into Hutt space in an effort to cut into their trade and reduce the Hutt's ability to remain independent."
"That's a recent development? How old is your information?"
"Very recent. For the past few weeks, the Empire had me working on encrypted messages they intercepted in those sectors."
That sounded like a bad omen, but there was nothing I could do about it, so it was pointless to waste time worrying about it. "Well, nothing's happening right now except recharging the deflector shields. I could use some caff." I unstrapped myself and rose from the pilot's chair. "Would you like a cup?" I asked Nakari.
"I'm not sure," she said. "Do you make your caff like your Nerf steak?"
"I'll try not to burn it, but no guarantees."
"Okay, I'll risk it then. It'd be an equal risk if I made it."
I felt almost giddy heading back to the galley, because I thought that the automatic brewer in the galley would produce something drinkable. But it turned out to be fair to middling horrendous. A fact that I remembered belatedly from our trip to Fex. Since it was the same type of brewer one saw almost everywhere, it was likely that the problem lay with me, and perhaps with Nakari also, not the appliance. I gave up and decided to mask my incompetence with lots of cream and sugar. A shrill alarm from the cockpit and an accompanying explosion of digital dismay from R2 was my first clue that something had gone very wrong. A lurch in the ship caused me to spill all the hot caff on myself. And that was my second clue. Nakari followed that up with,
"Luke, get back here! We're in trouble!"
Slapping at my tunic and pants to wick away some of the caff, I dashed back to the cockpit, where a battery of red lights winked at me and the infinite black of real space darkened the view.
"We've been pulled out of hyperspace. Failsafes came on in response to a mass shadow."
"What? But R2 plotted a course using established..." "Oh. We'd been pulled out of hyperspace by an Imperial interdictor cruiser, shaped like a Star Destroyer, but much smaller, with four gravity well projectors. One of those projectors had pulled us out of hyperspace, and no doubt the others were blocking our exit from the system. We couldn't leave without dealing with the interdictor. So be it. Shields up and arm everything we have," I said to Nakari as I strapped in. "R2, where are we?"
"Delang system,"
came the reply. Okay, I need a way out of here. We can't go back because of the pirates. If we keep going on the route we already chose, we'll probably run into more Imperial resistance. Is there another lane out of this system?
Yes. Trade route to Kupo.
The home system of the Kupoans. Perfect! Or at least the best option at the moment. Since the Kupoans were superficially cooperative with the Empire, they wouldn't have an Imperial fleet parked in their orbit to bully them into good behavior. All right, I need you to prepare us to jump for Kupo and tell me which gravity projector on that interdictor is blocking our path to it right now.
Wait, are you suggesting we attack the interdictor by ourselves?
Nakari said. It's either that or let them catch us. I don't think they'll respond to a polite request to stand down. And this is one of the old models. We should go before they have time to get reinforcements here. Right now it's unescorted and only has 24 TIE fighters.
Only 24? We're one ship with a couple of blasters and a few missiles.
That's all we need. And the TIE fighter pilots might be on lunch break or something, so we should be clear for a minute or two. We have speed and surprise on our side. I probably sounded more confident than I actually felt, but that is the only way to engage the enemy. Something I picked up from Han. He told me,
never go into battle saying, well, I guess I'll fight for my life now if I really have to. Once committed, kid, you have to commit fully, or you won't survive.
I pointed the nose down toward the interdictor and accelerated for the first time to full attack speed. It was breathtaking. The Desert Jewel was definitely faster than my X-Wing.
Luke, they've seen us by now. You can't surprise them.
I'm talking about the surprise we picked up from the Chekku clan on Rhodia, and the surprise that we would attack them at all, considering their advantages. The interdictor's battery swung up and began spraying green bolts from quad laser cannons, but most of it was for show, since only a couple of them had the proper field of fire. The first squadron of TIE fighters, which must have been on alert or else eating lunch in their cockpits, began to swarm out from underneath.
Let's get out of here,
Nakari insisted.
This is insane!
I didn't think so. I wasn't simply charging in with the hope that things would work out in my favor. I had a plan, and crazy people rarely had them. I prefer to think of it as risky, I said, and saying that reminded me of the conversation I had with Leia on the Patience. Surely this wasn't as dangerous as going after the Death Star. R2, which gravity projector should I target?
It's port side, ours starboard.
Both of them?
Yes.
That complicates things.
They weren't complicated before?
Nakari asked.
That cruiser has to be shielded.
It is, but this is one of the immobilizer models, and we've been studying them since the Empire has been using them against us on our raids. They have 12 shield generators, some of them ray shields, some particle shields. We take out the particle shield generators for the port side first, then go after the gravity projectors with whatever we have left.
While dodging TIE fighters and quad laser fire, do you hear yourself?
Both were coming at me now, and I sent the Jewel into a spin away from an aggressive TIE pilot. Nakari missed seeing it, so focused was she on convincing me to flee. I did say it was complicated.
Luke, let's just run to the edge of the interdiction field. The Jewel is fast enough.
I thought of that already, and perhaps it would have worked if I'd been in the cockpit instead of trying to make the calf machine produce something drinkable. But we'd lost too much time and space in those 10 to 15 seconds while I was unable to do anything. No, they sucked us in too close. The TIEs are already on us. Nakari turned her head, saw the vast assortment of death heading our way, jerked in her seat, and exclaimed,
"Gah!"
She didn't press her point after that, seeing that it was too late. Situations develop fast when fighters close on one another so quickly. We wove through the first 6 TIEs, avoiding their fire and head-on collisions. I managed to wing one of them with our laser cannons. We had 3 now, not just 1. And it careened into another, taking out both. I didn't bother firing at the cruiser, since there was no way our lone ship would weaken the shields enough to punch through. But I would gladly pull the trigger on the TIE fighters whenever opportunity afforded. The Empire had stopped making these particular interdictor cruisers because of their vulnerabilities, but while they weren't making any new ones, there were still plenty of them out there. The Alliance kept running into them, so we had been training recently on how to eliminate them before our raiding parties got wiped out by their escorts of destroyers and cruisers. The Empire was putting gravity projectors into Star Destroyers now, much more difficult to take out for a group and impossible for a single ship to damage. To my knowledge, no one had ever taken out an immobilizer with a single ship before, but I'd theorized about the possibility with Wedge. I wouldn't be trying it except that we were desperate, and we also had a bonus weapon that we'd picked up on Rhodia. The Empire must have been frantic to find us if it had sent this one interdictor to the edge of Hutt space without any escorts. Already in touch with the Force, I opened myself more to it and slipped into a non-thinking state of awareness, anticipation, and reaction, sliding the Desert Jewel into an attack vector that minimized my profile to the interdictor's gunners and led us straight to the port side shield generators. We were slightly faster than the standard TIE fighters. After the first half of the squadron passed by and then banked around for another pass, the second half emerged from underneath the ship, coming up on either side of the cruiser and moving at me in a pincer formation, albeit behind me so as not to catch themselves in a crossfire. Their shots were sloppy, and they didn't care about hitting the ship, depending on the shields to ward off the stray bolts. The Jewel handled well. This was her first test at full speed under heavy fire, and we took a couple of hits that reduced our shields to 70%. I was glad they had fully recharged before we encountered this situation. R2, light up their particle shield generator for me on the targeting hollow. A small rectangle flashed and blinked for me on the bladed edge of the cruiser, and I assigned two of the Jewel's six concussion missiles to it while also locating it with the Force. If I didn't bring the shield down, nothing else would work. The missiles had to get there. The TIE fighters would do nothing about them, but the cruiser's gunners would probably attempt to shoot them down. Spinning and juking my way down and feeling the ideal moment approach, I took two more hits from TIE fighters before launching the missiles. Cruiser fire aimed at me ceased and shifted to the missiles, which gave me more leeway to dodge the TIEs. I pulled the nose of the Jewel starboard so that we would dive past the shield generator shortly after the missiles hit. The sensors could pick up whether we scored a hit or not. The cruiser itself represented a blind spot. The hangar that spat out the TIE fighters was underneath the ship, and I couldn't see what lurked underneath. I squeezed the blaster trigger and held it down as we approached the edge. Two TIE fighters emerged from beneath the ship. The vanguard of the second squadron caught bolts in their cockpits and exploded. Four down, 20 to go, though the second squadron was still in the process of scrambling into action. The concussion missiles struck one after the other, the first weakening the generator's own shield, and the second following up, penetrating and destroying it. Before we passed it, another hit took our shields down to 50%. And then we were briefly hidden from line of sight as I pulled the Jewel up to skate underneath the cruiser, just a meter above the shields, to make it impossible for the TIEs above the cruiser to track me. To their scanners, I was invisible now, lost in the shadow of the interdictor. I planned to come up over the opposite side and take a shot at the newly vulnerable gravity projectors. I didn't hold my course, however. The TIE fighters above the cruiser's plane would be waiting for me in a direct line from where I disappeared, filling the space with ambush fire. I drifted aft so that I would reappear on the back starboard corner, and from there I'd fly up and over the bridge before attacking the projectors. Three TIEs pursued me from behind but couldn't get a lock. Their wings wouldn't allow them to get as close to the underside of the cruiser as the Jewel, and they couldn't line up a decent angle in the brief time they had before I cleared the other side. They took a few shots anyway to make it look like they were trying, and the bolts dissipated harmlessly against the cruiser's shields. The interdictor's gunners either didn't see me or were holding their fire to avoid tagging the TIEs. A couple more launched out of the hangar, and soon they would all be after me. As I cleared the starboard edge and climbed up, green bolts zipped past forward of my position where the topside TIEs had predicted I would emerge. The shooters followed too close behind that to correct course once they spotted me. They had to bank around for another pass. But some of the trailing fighters spotted me and banked to intercept. One of them banked right into a tie that shot up from under the ship. Two more down. I kept hugging the structure of the cruiser to make a firing solution difficult for their laser cannons. And as soon as I cleared the bridge, I targeted the twin bulges of the port gravity projectors and sent two concussion missiles each at them. That wouldn't necessarily set us free. With two of its projectors still working, we'd have to clear the interdictor's simulated mass by a good deal before our hyperdrive would engage. And the cruiser would have plenty of time to redirect those starboard projectors toward Kupo if its crew was alert and operating efficiently. We needed a kill shot, and we had one on board, purchased at great expense from Uthiel Outfitter's secret catalog. The problem was that it might kill us in the bargain. There was no time to think it over. If it was going to work at all, I had to use it now, before the missiles hit, because the physics demanded it. I couldn't expect to get another pass with only 50% of my shield remaining. The ties were forming up and responding to the surprise of my attack. The other squadron would be fully deployed any second. And when it was 18 against 1, they would surely deplete my shields before I could take my shot. So I armed and released the Uthiel Rock Crusher Compact Seismic Charge, letting it fall toward the rearmost gravity projector from the bracketed housing on the bottom of the Jewel. It didn't have a guidance system or any propellant, so it followed the Jewel's trajectory upon release and would detonate on a proximity trigger. It fell in an arc rather than continuing straight on our course because the gravity projector was still working. Nakari sucked in a breath and whispered,
"Uh-oh,"
when she saw me press the button, but I couldn't spare a glance in her direction. As the gases inside the seismic charge mixed prior to detonation, I pulled up and leveled out, streaking past the batteries of lasers. Then I kept going in as straight a line as possible, thrusting past the interdictor as the concussion missiles hit and running for all the Jewel was worth. And my path was like a needle pulling a string of TIE fighters behind me. They spread out in the back into a cone so they could all try to blast me. I stole a quick look at Nakari now that I had the time to do so, and she was breathing heavily, her eyes wide and her hands clutching the armrests. Or at least, as well as she could. Her left hand wasn't up to clutching anything yet, but it looked tense. The Jewel took a direct hit on the rear deflector as a result of my distraction, and our shields fell to 20%. Right afterward, the seismic charge dropped into the open, unshielded wound of the gravity projector and detonated. Its massive shockwave shredding the structure of the cruiser from the inside so that the huge ship bulged and came apart in a mess of bodies and metal, shearing the front half from the rear completely and rendering them into lifeless hunks of space debris heading in opposite directions. We picked up a tiny bit of speed as all the simulated gravity ceased to exist. We were clear to jump to hyperspace, and I reminded R2 of the fact. But the shockwave continued in our direction, too, plowing through the trailing TIE fighters behind us and shuttering them apart. We watched on the scanner as the red triangles representing the enemy disappeared one by one. They kept firing green bolts as if they were determined to see us dead before they died themselves. Almost all of it sailed past our cockpit into the void. But the concentrated fire was too much to dodge forever, and another bolt clipped us, essentially wiping out our shields, except for a courtesy veil of energy as sheer as a negligee. The fire eased up as the ties were destroyed, but the closest one with the best angle landed on the rear starboard, and a fraction of a second before it was obliterated, took out the sublight engine there, which spelled the end for us. Having nothing else to distract me from approaching death, I felt a spike of fear shoot through me, cold and unforgiving. We'd never outrun the shockwave now, and though I'd overcome daunting odds to this point, I wouldn't get any points for almost surviving. I was about to turn to Nakari and apologize for getting us killed, when R2 bleeped in triumph, flipped the hyperdrive, and we shot forward into a white blur, leaving behind a puzzle of wreckage for Imperial latecomers.
We made it!
We made it! Woo!
Nakari pounded her armrests and stomped her feet on the floor until she ran out of breath.
Oh, three kinds of dragon dump, Luke. I don't ever want to do that again. I hate space battles, you hear? All I can do is sit here and clench and pucker and hope I don't die.
I know. I'm sorry.
She rounded on me, her relief disappearing as she remembered that I had been the one to leap into that battle.
Charging that cruiser was stupid, Luke. We should be dead.
I shrugged. She was right, but coming out of the battle fugue, I was beginning to feel something that was two parts relief, one part euphoria, and one part smug.
It worked.
Realizing she couldn't second-guess success, she said,
"Yeah, but...
yeah." She broke into a grin.
"Okay. That was some pretty good piloting. Maybe even legendary."
"Don't tell your dad."
She laughed.
"I won't."
"I'm going to go check on Drusel."
"Okay.
I'll yell if we're pulled into real space again."
Entering the quarters, I wrapped my arms around R2 and told him he was the best droid in the galaxy. But he couldn't tell 3PO I said that, or I'd have to deal with passive-aggressive complaints for the next 10 years.
"Thanks for the save."
R2-D2 burbled happily, and I turned to Drusel and inquired after her health. Her spine looked even more rigid than normal as she sat, and her voice was thicker, more muffled.
"I'm recovering from glandular excitement. Thank you for asking."
"Well, I beg your pardon? Is this a bad time?"
"I am told it is a biological phenomenon, not unlike the after effects of adrenaline in humans."
"Oh, that kind of excitement. Good. I'm sorry I worried you. We're safe for the moment, anyway. En route to Kupo."
"We should have perished. Mathematically, we had almost no chance of survival once we attacked. How did you accomplish this?"
I shrugged. "R2 got us out of there."
"The droid did his job adequately,"
the Given said, a dismissive summation, to which R2 belched an electronic burst of outrage.
"But I speak of the piloting prior to that. Are you a Jedi, in fact, Luke Skywalker?"
"No," I snorted. "Not even close."
"You refuse the title, yet dress yourself in the trappings. You carry a lightsaber, and you use the Force to aid in the piloting of the ship, correct?"
"Yes,"
I admitted, wondering where this would lead.
"Astounding. I have never thought of it before, having had no occasion to do so. But the Force must be a fulcrum variable. Yes, I must give this more thought."
"Sorry, a fulcrum variable?"
"A variable around which improbabilities can be turned to probabilities, or vice versa. The impossible becomes possible. At which point, one might as well not even do the math. But of course, I can't help myself in that regard."
I was relieved that her line of questioning only looped her back into another math trip, but I couldn't resist asking about the path ahead. I still had my doubts about Drusel's value to the Alliance, and her questioning about my connections to the Jedi was disconcerting. But she might prove useful to us in the short term, while her interests and ours coincided.
"Listen, since you appear to enjoy it, could you maybe think about the likelihood of us making it to the surface of Kupo without running into any more interdictors or other Imperial contact? If you think it's improbable, we should abort now and see if we can reach somewhere else, because we can't make another escape like that with an engine gone and nothing to shoot but laser cannons."
Drusel's mouth widened in what I supposed must be joy. She grabbed her data pad and woke it from its sleep.
"A task! Excellent! You have my thanks. I will report soon."
Her face turned down, and I realized that I had just been dismissed.